Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Josh Brown, I hear that you finally managed to get your hands on an Xbox Series X.
Yes, finally. It's been Scott Tilman.
Yes!
I don't even want to tell you how many days I have wasted, how many hours of my life I have wasted on stock informer websites, on Twitter updates, trying to find one of these bad boys.
I was trying to find you one at one point. I was just like, for the love of God, it can't be that hard, but it is.
I had my friends on it. I had my family on it. My dad doesn't even know what an Xbox Series X is, yet he was searching for it. It was an ordeal, much harder than it should be. And eventually, all I had to do was be on the ball for every day for a month and then buy a bundle I didn't want to get the thing I did want.
Oh my God, the t-shirt that you got. That is it. How is it in the flesh, in the cotton? Because it didn't look good.
I resent that I have seen it in the flesh and it is still in its packaging and may just go straight to the charity shops because it's a scam. It's a scam, right? Selling those bundles is taking advantage of people who really want a new console to explain in order to get the Xbox Series X, I needed to buy it as part of a bundle because there were a bunch of different bundles on sale.
There'll be set of headphones for you then?
Yep, essentially, I just had to get lucky picking one at random. A lot of them were out of stock, and I was just picking a bunch until one of them came in stock. The one that did come in stock was the Xbox Series X by itself with this tin pot headset that I'm never going to use and this terrible t-shirt that I'm never going to wear, but, you know, it inflated the price. I hope they enjoyed it. And ultimately, I do have an Xbox now, so I'm not complaining too much. It
wasn't overpriced. I used to work in GameStation, and GameStation aren't going anymore, and we can't say where your bundle's from to avoid calling them out directly, but if they're a well-known chain. But when I worked in GameStation and the Wii, I worked the Wii rush of like 2009, or when the first few years when that system was on sale, where it was out of stock all the time. And then when we got like 4 or 5 in, it was always the manager's idea to go like, well, what else can we bundle with this? Let's put Carnival Games with it, and then we can charge an extra £40 for it or whatever. And it is always just the case. And you could tell that when you had your the version you were going to get in the checkout, where it's like, this is insane. I don't need this. And wondering what your t-shirt is, it's a black shirt that just says Player One. Just little Player One on the front. That's
which
all
I
it
am,
is.
To be fair. I am Player One. It's accurate. I will wear it when I play whatever games I'm going to play in it. But yeah, it's like, the funny thing is, I don't mind the concept of bundles. You know, do what you got to do. Some of them are quite useful. You know, I was trying to get the one with the extra controller because, hey, that would have been useful. Or the one bundled in with, you know, Game Pass. It just happened to be the one that went through. Was the one bundled with stuff I neither wanted nor needed, which is kind of like, I'm very happy got it on the one hand, but on the other hand, it could have been any other bundle and I would have been happier.
True. I mean, that t-shirt, like you said, can go at the charity shop, that pair of headphones, nice Christmas present for someone that you don't like. I don't want them before you give me them, but that's where they can potentially go. Me and you were going to do a video on the reality of trying to get a system at this point in 2021, because you had a few things that you wanted to get off your chest a few weeks ago, but how do you feel now that you finally got one? Has a lot of that rage dissipated, or do you think is there anything to say about the reality of getting a Series X at this point in 2021?
I think so. Both the Series X and the PS5 obviously are incredibly difficult to get your hands on, and a lot of that is understandable. You know, there's a chip shortage, there's been a pandemic, it's really difficult to get these things out, and I totally sympathize with that side of it. I think that is obviously fully understandable, and if that was like the only issue, I don't think it's necessarily an issue. It is frustrating, but it's not kind of, you know, it's to be expected. However, I do take issue with the way that these things are rolled out, because like I said, in order to get one, you have to be like, you have to be really on the ball. You have to be like clued in to these trackers. You have to dedicate a bunch of your time to know when stock is going to drop, because it's just so unceremonious. You know, stock can drop on random websites at random times. There's no rhyme or reason to it. And even if you do, you know, sign up to you know, mailing lists that will inform you when stock goes in, it's, there's not a guarantee that would work. You know, there was one kind of retailer that I signed up for to be emailed when stock came in, and stock came in, I didn't get an email, and I was kind of like, well, what's the point of this?
Well, they go.
You can't. Sorry, go on.
No, I was just gonna say super quickly, like they go live on the website as they email you. So by the time you've read the email, it's gone again.
Yeah, totally. And it's the fact that you can't like pre-order them for anywhere. I think, you know, a lot of the frustration would have been alleviated if you could, you know, literally just put down a deposit or something and you pre-order something. And then when it comes in stock, you might not get it straight away. You might not get it for a few months, but you know, you've got one when a wave comes in and you finally, you know, it finally becomes your turn. Like, I think that is a much better system than this kind of like Wild West scenario that we've got where retailers just throw them up. The, you know, like the bots will come in and swipe them, and then resellers will make, you know, so much money off it, because we're clued in. We do this as a job.
We'd like to think so.
We like to think so. We're probably not as clued in as we think we are, but we do this as a job, you know. Uh-huh. We follow games. We like to have the new consoles, and it's difficult for us to get these machines. So I can't imagine that, you know, some poor kid who's relying on his parents to get this for Christmas, or a PlayStation 5 for Christmas.
Oh, God.
And it's just a lot of hassle. It's a lot of work. And it's understandable why there's a shortage, but it's not as understandable to me anyway why there's such miscommunication and why is there so much frustration about the rollout of them and how they're sold. That's where I have an issue with it. You know, like I keep reiterating, not so much the problem in and of itself.
No, man, I think it's totally fair. I mean, the thing for me is, like you said, there should be some sort of queuing system. That's what Shop 2 were doing, and that's how I managed to get my PlayStation 5, because it was just like, you're in this big queue from a pre-order standpoint, and I guess we'll slowly fulfill them across like the next few months kind of thing. But I mean, even there, I think, have abandoned that overall. You can't enter into a queue now. It is just snap stuff up when it appears. And the only way I was able to get a Series X was just sheer luck. Like, I was online at 2:30, 3:00 in the morning, as I'm wont to do, and I just happened to check Currys, and they were in stock. There was 5 of them. So I just buy that, just get it, and just get it sent. I'm not even looking at the price, I'll just have it, and that was how I managed to get mine. But unless, like, God help, Lord, any deity help the amount of grandmas trying to get this for Christmas. Like, there's no way that my own grandma or anyone like that would be able to figure out this whole messy system. And I wonder whether or not Sony and Microsoft are holding back some stock because they know there's going to be this massive Christmas rush, and that's why everything's being like drip fed at the minute. But there was a thing, not to make the whole podcast about this, because we do have other stuff to talk about, but when you were checking stock the other week, there was someone that you went on, maybe it was like Argos or something, that had been given one yes. unit, and it was just like, what even is that? Like, what? Yeah. Who? How did that happen where, you know, a major retailer has one?
Well, this is the thing, you know, like I said, I've been following a lot of these trackers. I think it was the Independence one that I was mostly following, which updated live and would say if something was in stock and stuff. And yeah, there was I can't remember which retailer it was, but it was like, oh, there's suddenly some in stock. And then a few minutes later, there was another update with them saying they only got one in.
And it's gone.
And it's gone. Brilliant. And it's like, that's useless information to me. I mean, obviously not from the person who's writing it, but I mean, as like a consumer, it's like, why would you give me just one and have all the spite over it? You look at some of the product pages and it's like 15,000 people viewed this in the last 24 hours. So when you've got 15,000 people vying for like a handful of consoles, it, like I said, it feels like the Wild West. It just feels like anyone's game.
When on Google, it's like, oh, yeah, Series X back in stock, and you follow the link, and it's to eBay. And it's just like, well, it's not really in stock, is it? It's not really stock. Like, that's just sort of someone has one somewhere that they're now charging £1,500 for it. But you're welcome to the ranks anyway of having a PS5 and a Series X. We're a rare breed at this point in
Thank
time.
You.
But hopefully those things will ease up across 2022 or towards the end of this year. Two things I want to dive into as a collective thing is just, one thing is just what we're playing. And the other thing, that is what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about what we're playing. Because the other thing is a big old controversial thing, which I'm going to throw at you, because something you've been playing is a bit of the old Halo 3. Which you've not been liking at all, Josh Brown.
Listen, right, okay. So when I got my Xbox Series X, obviously I went straight to Game Pass and downloaded a bunch of games. I actually, you know, I assumed when I got it, this would be an entire podcast about the Xbox Series X, but unfortunately, yes, I haven't played as much as I wanted to because I was a bit wobbly on the Saturday when it came, wasn't really feeling up to playing or watching anything, which kind of went through to the Sunday. But then by the time I was like, right, okay, I'm feeling all right, I'm feeling good, I'm going to play some games.
Your baby's in your arms.
I booted up the Xbox Series X and accidentally forgot to press the button that downloads things while it's in standby mode. So nothing was downloaded. All I had was the Master Chief Collection ready to play and the Medium, which I'm not going to jump in properly yet. Right. So I went into the Master Chief Collection, booted it up for old time's sake, jumped into a game of Halo 3 multiplayer.
And then threw your guts up.
And to be honest, didn't like it. No, I did throw my guts up a little bit. I know, I couldn't believe it either. I thought I was going to have a lovely trip down nostalgia lane. Yeah. But when I played the solitary game of it that I did play, it was just, it was not how I remembered it in my mind's eye, Scott Tilton.
Well, see, that's kind of what I want to pick apart a little bit, because I was saying to you before we started recording, excuse me, as I die, that I've been playing Halo constantly since, when did it come out, 2001? Like, I've always had, like, something installed. Either a different Halo game, always had them there, and then, like, obviously with the Master Chief Collection, that stayed on my Xbox One, stayed on my Xbox One X, and now it's on my Series X, and I just have it. It's just always there. It's omnipresent. It's just something that I just won't delete, even though it is 120 gig, or whatever size it is. And so for me, like, I never had that, because you hadn't played Halo since like 2010-ish, I think, so it's been quite a while.
I've played, obviously, you know, 4 and 5 since, but I've not gone back to Halo 3 specifically.
The originals, yeah.
2010, you know, a long time ago.
So, like, so my whole thing is that, like, those old ones, like, yeah, they are different. They are, like, aged in regards to how fast something like Call of Duty or Titanfall is. But for me, like, there's always such a specific feel to Halo that I think, I don't know, I love it. Like, I love how different it is. I love that it's not just hold the left trigger, then the right trigger as fast as you can, which I know I'm being, like, regressive, but I always think that that's for me, that's what Call of Duty boils down to. And sometimes I'm in the mood for that, but sometimes I like how, and I refer to it as combat chess, which I know it gets referred to, that's how Doom gets referred to. But for me, Halo always has all these different options, whether it's the tools that you get that they brought in Halo 3, the vehicles, the different, like, weapon, like, loadouts and stuff, the ways you can get the aerial, like, you know, you can approach, like, a combat situation from a bunch of different angles. And so for me, that's the thing that keeps it fresh, and even when I go back to it, it retroactively makes it fresh, because nothing has even come close to that. Right. Weirdly, something that came close, I guess, is like Splitgate, because that's like literally Portal meets Halo, and I like the idea of flanking people by firing a portal past them and then disappearing to the wall to my side, then coming up behind them and then hitting the headshot. That's really cool. But yeah. Yeah, so for me, like, that's what makes Halo sort of, like, constantly fresh. And it is slow. I know Halo Infinite, they've sped it up and stuff. But what was this the thing that hit you, I guess, when you went back to it?
I think it was just the slowness of it and how cumbersome it felt, I suppose. You know, I always knew that Halo was, you know, like you said, much slower, much more methodical in a lot of ways, yeah, compared to your likes of Call of Duty, which were very, you know, twitchy, very fast, very die, respawn, and come back into the fight. Here, you obviously, you know, like you said, you know, you have a lot of options at your disposal. It takes a long time to actually kill someone. I was totally prepared for how the game functions and how it's structured. What I wasn't prepared for was just how far we've kind of like come since Halo 3,
when
I was jumping in. And there were a lot of things, like, you know, you take for granted now that aren't really there. For instance, a sprint button. For instance, quicker movement, more agility with your Spartan. And I just completely forgot kind of like that it, because I was so used to, you know, even Halo Reach, even Halo 4, even Halo 5, the advancements that were made and the tweaks to the gameplay, like going back to the originals, I was just sort of shocked about just kind of like, yeah, like the slowness of it, the clunkiness of it in a way, and I just wasn't having much fun. I just kind of realized I've, as a multiplayer gamer, have
it's not for you
beyond the classic Halo team deathmatch style and want something a little bit more with my game.
I'll tell you what, I'm very curious, because I think, because you've got the Master Chief Collection, have you only got Halo 3 as part of that? I forget if you can segment the downloads or not, but have you got everything sitting there?
I should have now. It was ready to play, quote unquote, before, and I think I had 2, 3, and 4 installed, or at least that's what it was letting me throw up on the
thing. Because one of the things that I love the most about the MCC is that you can do those multi-game playlists and like you can do, like, they do them across the campaign, but you can also do it online and stuff. And it's weird because if you just tick all the boxes, like, you know, throw any level at me from the first four plus reach, even ODST, then you'll just get thrown into Halo 1, followed by Halo 3, 2, 1, whatever. And it was when I went back to Halo 1, like, after a little while, that I was like, oh, man, we've come a long way. But I meant in regards to Halo 1 to 3. So, like, right. I don't know what the hell you're going to feel going into Halo 1, because that thing is really old school.
Well, it's funny, man, because I'm going to go through it all, obviously. But when it came to Halo, I was always there for the campaigns. Like, I was, you know, we were talking before we started recording this, and I didn't... Everyone kind of doesn't believe me when I say this in the comments. They just kind of, like, they go in on it, but I didn't have, like, broadband until, like, 2008. So I didn't have online gaming at my house until very, very late, until post-College Duty 4. So I kind of missed the boat when it came to Halo. I played a lot of it locally. I played a lot of it locally with friends. But for me, the appeal of it, was mostly the campaigns. So even though I played a lot of Halo 3 online after the fact, by then I'd already moved on to Call of Duty 4 anyway. Like, that was the next big thing. That was the thing I was into. So I never grew up with them in an online capacity in the same way. And even though I have a lot of nostalgia for them, I don't view them as the kind of, you know, defining relics that a lot of gamers like you do who were there.
Oh yeah,
you know,
rare is the minute that I'm not saying that, to be honest.
Exactly.
Yeah, totally. They're definitely way up there.
So it's a case of I'm looking forward to it, and I don't mind how it plays in the actual campaigns. I'm totally fine with that. But when it comes to the multiplayer portion of things, I've come to expect a certain level of elegance that I don't think is quite there anymore, and that's totally fine because these games are like 15 years old at this point.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the stuff that I think would make you bounce off, like you said, the sort of the cumbersome, the clunkiness of it, the very deliberate nature of the animations, the fact that it is ostensibly still a very PC shooter, you know, put on consoles, they are absolutely the things that make me love it. I love how physics-based it is, and that you can sort of just throw, like, a plasma grenade to the side of a warthog and it'll spin and go out of control and wipe out someone else along the way. Like, you just, you can't do that in other games. I know the Battlefield is steering more into that this year with 2042, but there's a feeling to, again, I would put it under the combat chess umbrella of just, oh, I bet if I attach this to this, then this will do this. And it's just, you start thinking of combat scenarios in a way that so many other shooters got so far away from. And I remember seeing, like, looking at Halo Infinite, and one of the new abilities is that you can, from the wrist-mounted, like, launcher that you have, you can fire, like, a map recon thing. And you can, if you do that, you hit the button, you throw the recon thing, and if you throw a grenade immediately after, you can attack those both together, so they both go as far as the recon thing. And I'm just like, that's so cool. That's, like a really Halo-based way to play. And I'm like, that's really, really cool. So I kind of hope that, I guess the more you play, maybe, I don't know, I don't know whether you'd have to fundamentally regress at this point to enjoy that stuff if you are so, like, because you play so much Warzone, and it's like at some point they're so different.
Totally. I mean, yeah, I mean, Warzone is kind of, well, not just Warzone, but like Call of Duty Modern Warfare, you know, like the recent one, the 2019 one, like that, it plays so smoothly, and that's a jump up even from older COD games, that it's kind of like ruined first-person shooters from even like 3 years ago. Like, they seemed kind of not as tight in comparison, even though you could argue that they're better overall games. The actual shooting mechanics just feel so buttery smooth. But yeah, like, going back to Halo, I think that's why I enjoyed the big team battles more than I did the kind of like tighter deathmatches, because liked all that stuff that you mentioned, you know, the interplay of vehicles, being able to throw a plasma grenade onto like the side of a wall,
jacking a mid-air banshee thing and kicking some guy out of it.
That was absolutely sick. So I really enjoyed all that stuff, and I did get a taste in the map I was playing. I can't remember which one it was, but it's the one where it's like a big bridge and you've got like the two jump pads on either side and you're kind of like jumping.
I know exactly which one you mean. I think it begins with F, but I forget what you call it.
I think everyone will. It's like an iconic Halo map. But I got a taste of that when I did throw a grenade onto one of those pads, as you used to do, and it goes up and it kills someone on the other side. And you're like, that is awesome. But in between those moments of genius, it didn't have the connective tissue to keep me wanting to play more. But obviously, I will try it.
And well, that's the thing.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Better taste.
That is a really interesting thing, because I think that's why they've sped up like the base movement for Halo Infinite. Like, Halo Infinite moves like a Titanfall, moves like a Call of Duty in terms of base speed now, which is like, that assumedly would then stitch together those moments even more. And like, some of the stuff they've shown off from the beta or alpha, whatever state it's in, seems to be like that, where it's, oh, we're going to try and make it so you're experiencing those weird little bits where the game saves you up some physics-based experiment over and over again faster, and I look forward to that stuff. Something that I've been playing, unless you have any more thoughts on Halo, is the mighty, I was going to say Call of Duty, that's because I wrote down KOTOR, and then my brain went to KUR. It's not that at all. It's Knights of the Old Republic from 2003, which I don't know what made me go back to this. I think I was writing about Jedi Fallen Order for a list or something, and I was like, oh, I remember in Knights of the Old Republic when you made a lightsaber? And in my head, because it's been, how long has it been? 17 years? Like, 18 years? Like, in my head, which is a long time, I was like, oh my god, you like craft it and you pick your saber, you pick the crystal and you like carve it and you put the craft it and you make the saber and the hilt and all. You don't do any of that, Josh Brown. You get to pick your crystal color, but there's only three. There's a blue, green, and yellow. And that's it. You can get a red one afterwards. If you go back to the crystal cave, you can get that. But even when you like finally meet up with one of the Jedis and you're like, oh, I'm going to follow the teachings and everything. And he's just like, cool, go make your saber. And you just go to the workbench and click lightsaber. And then you just have a lightsaber. That's it. In my head, there was a whole process of doing that. And you actually go to the crystal caves after that. I thought you had to go and get the crystal, bring it back, forge it, blah, blah. And so I've been living on KOTOR. I've put about 10 hours into Knights of the Old Republic, which is only making me love old school BioWare more. Like, I absolutely had a renaissance for the first Mass Effect as well. And I know you probably haven't played KOTOR since 2003 or something.
A long time ago. Fully. Totally.
Yeah. But there's something about the way that BioWare used to do stuff. I think I said this to Jules on UBP, but like the whole way that they don't tell you exactly where to go. They just say, you need to find out about X, or you need to like locate something. And then you go and you can just ask anybody that question and have all these really cool conversations and find out all this world building stuff. And it slowly takes you to where you're supposed to go, but not in a way that I always hate in games, which is where I have no idea, where I don't know where I'm supposed to go. And I'm just trying to guess what they want me to do. And so it's kind of just like, and to underscore the whole thing, is just like Knights of the Old Republic is still brilliant today. And I know that we said before recording that one of the things that I love the most is the opening, which you were saying at the time was like a really like disliked thing back then.
Yeah, man, a lot of people don't like the opening at all, like before you become a Jedi, when you're just kind of like messing around on the spaceport and stuff. Like, to a lot of people, they would rather that be skippable or not be there at all. I think it has a purpose, and I do think a lot of people concede that it has a purpose, but I feel like a lot of the sentiment is just, I want to be a Jedi, get me the lightsaber, get me into the action a bit longer, because that quote-unquote prologue, it's more of an introduction, more of a first act. It takes a lot of hours to get through if you're combing out doing all the missions and stuff. It's a hefty chunk of time, and especially if you're going into it not expecting that, I think it could be quite a shock to the system to realize that you're going to have to build up to this moment where you do become a Jedi. However, you've been loving it, and obviously it serves such an important function to your character's growth that I think it is, you know, worth it. But you seem like you've got loads out of it. Like, you couldn't stop playing that opening scene.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I put about 6 hours into that opening bit, just wandering around Taras, talking to all the different, like, alien races, even just talking to people in a Star Wars universe. And it's not... The thing is, as well, it definitely goes hand in hand with where Star Wars is at as a brand right now. Because for me, you know, you flash back to 2003, that was, what, that was before? That was in the middle of the prequels. That was in between episode 2 and 3, I think.
Yes.
And even if it wasn't, Star Wars as a brand was still pretty sky high. Like, yes, there were negative reactions to the prequels, but you had an entire generation of people going like, this is brilliant, love Darth Maul, give me double lightsabers, it's all great. And so I feel like back then it was just, and plus on the game side there were tons of Star Wars games that were doing their rounds as well, and it was just like, okay, let me be a Jedi in an RPG. And I feel like that was a big deal. But now, because we're post Rise of Skywalker, we're post something like Solo, these sort of like, you know, different degrees of misfires, whatever you want to say, the brand is nowhere near as solid as it used to be. And I think that go-to thing of like, what do you want from Star Wars? Okay, it's a Jedi. It would like apply to the 2000s in a way that it doesn't now, where I feel like a lot of the blockbuster bluster is like overspent. And now it's just kind of like, oh, actually, it would be really cool as if you just looked over there and focused on this random person doing something and what's their life like, because we've seen all this like big over the top stuff. And so for me, like, that was the thing with the opening of KOTOR, where you're a nobody, you're an absolute nobody, and you just get to hang around in Taras playing Pazak, the card game, with all these different people in the bar, go into a Sith house party, which I didn't even know was in there, and where I was talking to this woman, I had a big complaint about her that she was, how dare she drink around the people whose planet she's trying to destroy, and then she was like, I'm sorry, oh, we've got this general having a big Sith house party if you want to come along. I was like, I'll go to a Sith house party, even though I've just said you were absolute scum. And then there's a great smash cut where it just cuts from her going like, oh, you should try this booze. It just cuts to them all just passed out on the floor, having drank too much, and you steal her armor and you're on your way. And so all of that stuff is something that I think young me didn't appreciate at all, or even know was in there. Whereas like now I'm like, and especially where RPGs are at, I'm like, oh, this is a way of like carving out my own story that I absolutely took for granted back then. In a way that made me completely reappreciate it. I don't know if there's anything that you've gone back to, I guess Mass Effect, that made you kind of think about how RPGs used to be versus how they are now.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, we look at BioWare now, and they've made some decent to pretty good games in like the past decade or so. You know, Dragon Age Inquisition, a lot of people really like. Andromeda's okay, you know, it's fine.
I would say
it's
right. Yeah, it's been 7 years since they've had anything other than a fire.
Yes, totally. And then even before then, though, like you said, if you go back to the early 2000s, if you look at KOTOR, if you look at the first Mass Effect, like, that's even a completely different studio to Mass Effect 2 BioWare, to Dragon Age 2 BioWare, you know what I mean? Like, they did a lot of shifting, a lot of evolving during that time period. If you go back to those early RPGs, they are just so full of personality, and they're so full of character, and they're so full of choice and agency. And like you said, you can craft your own stories, you can have these worlds to explore. And I think if you put KOTOR into context, like, you were there, you know, back then we all wanted to be a Jedi. And of course we were Jedi in other games, whether it was Jedi, what's it called?
Jedi Power Battles, 10 out of 10, 5-star game, loved it.
I was going to say that, but Power Battles is really good. What's the Kyle Katarn games called? I've literally just playing them.
Dark
Jedi
Forces?
Outcast and stuff. That series. That series where you could be a Jedi. But KOTOR gave you that something. KOTOR gave you that something extra where you were a Jedi now in a world, and you could explore that world, and you could be a Jedi in more ways than just flinging around a lightsaber, even though there was obviously that. You could learn about the Force, you could talk to, you know, whoever, and you could forge a proper journey. And to Star Wars fans back in the day, to a young Star Wars fan like me, that was the dream come true. And I think that's why we've embellished certain things like the lightsaber construction, which is just going to pick a crystal and it kind of just does it itself in our minds. we had constructed this kind of vision of it, that we really were the Jedi. We really were constructing it with our blood, sweat, and tears, and we were putting that stuff together. Obviously, you go back to it now, and we've had so many Star Wars games since, we've had so much Star Wars media since that, you kind of realize how much we were using BioWare's framework to fill in the blanks with of using our imagination, you know.
Yeah, man. Well, I think all that stuff was, it's a testament to how good the writing is and how a really good sense of place they give you. Because you do, I mean, you still have to do answer some questions about the Jedi code and things like that before you become a Jedi. Then they give you the robes, and then you can go off and explore Dantooine and stuff like that. But yeah, there is that. I've got such a difference of the original memory I had of KOTOR, which I would have only been like 14 or something at the time, versus the reality of playing it now when I'm like 32. And I'm just kind of like, okay, there's way more going on here. There's way more class commentary just in the way that Taris is structured. There's just way more to that. And it always reminds me of something that Jenova Chen, just to throw this in, something that Jenova Chen said, who's the dude that put together Journey and Sky Children of the Light and Flower, just saying that, you know, anything that is created with a mature sensibility will age with you. And I love going back to stuff and realizing, like, oh man, like, yeah, I get way more out of this. It's why people used to talk about like Pixar, appealing to children and adults, because there's enough in there at the core of it that works for multiple ages. And that's just been really cool. Speaking of working for multiple ages, don't know, really a segue, but a way to talk about Forgotten City.
You've
City?
Already forgotten it.
Fulu City. I don't know which one it is, Josh Brown.
I want everyone to know that this title actually lives up to its name, because I've told Scott I've been playing this about three times.
Is it the Forgotten City?
In each time, you've asked me if it's the Lovecraft one, aka the Sinking City, which I did admittedly play a few months ago. No, the Forgotten City is a new next-gen game. I think it's only on PlayStation at the moment. But let me pitch it to you. Let me explain to you and whoever's listening why it's cool, what it's about, why you should play this game. So, essentially, you are this person who wakes up on a riverbed, and you suddenly get transported back thousands of years ago to this forgotten Roman city. Okay, so you arrive there, you talk to the people who are in charge, and they say, this is a secret place, and we live under the golden rule. We have been imposed this golden rule by the gods, which means that if any one of us commits a sin, we will all turn into gold statues. We will all die and be turned into gold. So your job is to go around, explore, talk to people, and figure out initially who is going to break the golden rule and how you can stop them from doing that before everyone dies. But the twist is, it's also a time loop game. So every time someone commits a sin, or every time you die, or every time something goes wrong, you start right back at the beginning, and you have this one day to figure out what's happening, what's going on. It's very exploration heavy. There's a little bit of combat, but it's mostly you kind of like talking to people, kind of like deducing what's happening and trying to get to the bottom of this mystery. And I love it, Scott Telford. I think it's absolutely incredible, and it's so full of twists. It's so full of secrets. It just keeps on unwrapping the more you go on. Like, I haven't even touched any of the juiciest parts, because I don't want to spoil it for anyone going in, you're not knowing anything. I think that's all you should know. And the way it's unraveling, the way the characters are unraveling, my lord, this is the top five of the year, perhaps, for me at the moment, if it pays off. I've not fully finished it yet. A few endings, but
other than you mentioning it, and in my head, I was already getting Call of Cthulhu and Sinking City mixed up, and then you went, I'm playing the Forgotten City, and my head just went, blah, I'm going to play the Windjammers player. I don't even know what you're talking about, Josh Brown, but I do hope you get a Series X. And I didn't really think about it after that. And so, but you described it this way. I kind of looking at the screenshots for it, I just thought, and because of the setting and everything, thought it'd be way more action focused. But I like the idea of a dialogue driven thing. It almost feels a bit, like everybody's gone to the rapture in terms of just like there are all these like world rules that are like you're poking and prodding at, you don't really fully understand. It is kind of like a walking sim in terms of the majority of what you're doing. Like conversations, yes. I guess, rather than just walking around.
Yeah, mostly conversations, mostly exploring, but you do have, you know, some combat areas. There are some platforming segments, for instance. So there's a lot to it. It's like this open world, well, small open world that you're exploring. But I think, and I might have got this wrong, I was only doing a bit of research before buying it, but I think it started off as a Skyrim mod and then developed into this full game. And you can kind of see the Skyrim DNA in it. Like when you talk to someone, it's kind of like the classic Skyrim
zooms in on the face.
Yeah, with the text box and stuff, and you're playing it, you kind of get the feel of it as you're, you know, running and jumping around and stuff. But it's lovely to look at. Mm-hmm. I think the characters are really good. And like I say, there have been so many times where it's just kind of like dropped my jaw when I've been playing it, not expecting something to happen or some reveal to come. Mm-hmm. And it's had so many of those now where I'm just like, this might be the best game. This I can't stop thinking about this game.
Is it actually better than the Cthulhu one, though? That's the main question. Is it up there?
It's much better, I think. The Cthulhu one, the Lovecraft one, is like, it's good, but it's a lot of work to love, if that makes sense. It's got a lot of issues. It's not the most polished. I liked it a lot, but it's not one I would recommend to everyone. Whereas this, I think I would be more inclined to recommend it to everyone. Mm. It's still, you know, definitely not a complete mainstream blockbuster. It still has its niche, but if you like, you know, puzzle exploration games with a kind of a cool story, and if you like the time period, then I think it's definitely worth investigating. I think it sounds like I'm shilling for this game. I'm not. We're not sponsored by the game, but I think it's like £25, so it's not a full price thing either. So I've just been really enjoying it, man. Like,
I don't know, because I've got, like, this week everything kicks back in. Like, we've got 12 minutes on Friday, Ghost of Tsushima on Saturday, and I like the idea of that. I hadn't even heard of it until you mentioned it, and it is right up against Knights of the Old Republic, the hot new jam. So I've got to, if I'm going to try and fit that in, we'll have to see. I was going to throw in terms of just very quickly things that I've been playing that are awesome and that I recommend you go play. Windjammers 2, the beta for that is out. I don't know if anyone's like, online, people who play Windjammers do not shut up about Windjammers, hence me being one of them. Windjammers is a really awesome one-on-one, like, disc-throwing game. It's just, there's a whole bunch of different, like, skill shots that you can do, but it's just a one-on-one thing. Very snappy online matches. On the original game, there's a sequence of AI fight battles that you can do, too. But the beta is out for Windjammers 2, which is made by .emu, or .emu? Emulation? .emu, who did the Streets of Rage 4 sequel, and so the animation is like stellar, but they put the beta out for the online multiplayer, so you can try that, and it's all for free and stuff too. Weirdly, you had to go and go on the European PlayStation store, set the download off using the browser, and then go back on the PS5 and then go, okay, then it showed up as something you owned, and then you could hit download. Actually, searching Windjammers 2 on the PlayStation store didn't bring anything up, but it is out, and maybe they fixed that by now. It's really good and it's free, so go play that. Another thing is that I didn't even realize my friend, did you play My Friend Pedro on Xbox or on, I think it's on Switch too.
I did not, but I saw it and I wanted to, and then you never did. It's like classic scenario.
Classic us, you might say. My Friend Pedro has a mobile sequel, or like a mobile spin-off, which I run the other way for the vast majority of mobile games, but this one is one of the only actually brilliant mobile games, with a really cool control scheme. Because My Friend Pedro is already a side-scrolling action shooter where you're sort of just doing like lots of jumps, lots of spins, lots of slow motion, twin pistols, shooting multiple targets out the sky and everything, whilst riding a skateboard in some levels and stuff like that. And so the mobile one is called My Friend Pedro Ripe for Revenge, where you just go after Pedro's a floating banana, if you didn't know.
Of course he is.
And he just tells you to go kill people. But in the mobile game, his family have gone missing, so he pops up, he's just like, I need you to go get my family, and so you go do that. And it's just a nice excuse to just do lots of slow motion stuff. But the way that it controls is kind of like Angry Birds, where you're constantly you're slingshotting your character through the level, so you pull in the opposite direction of where you want to go, so you fire your dude like up and over someone, and then you hold the direction again and tap to shoot. It sounds really weird. Mobile control schemes don't translate well to being described in audio. But My Friend Pedro, and it's free, you can pay to get rid of the adverts, but it is free, is a brilliant mobile version of that game. And if you don't even want to play that, just go play My Friend Pedro. Josh, go play it. You've got Game Pass.
I worry about what you do to me if I said, Scott, I'm not going to play the Xbox Series X. I'm going to play My Friend Pedro on mobile instead.
I would take that over you sitting on Code Veronica instead of the other stuff you've got. But it depends.
Code Veronica has been an obstacle that is stopping me from playing the Xbox Series X. It is Resident Evil. I've never properly gone through. I've only ever watched people do it. So I thought, you know what? While I'm waiting, I might not get an Xbox Series X, I want to play something. So I bought that, have been playing it. And you know what? I might play every single Resident Evil game ever made now.
I mean, you might. You just might. The thing is, I was waiting, what's the next reason he's going to give me for not playing Ori? And I think it's this. I think it's going to be this. It's just, I can't now. I've got a code red. Resident Evil 3 beckons. I can't, I've got to do, I've got to go fight Nemesis, mate. I can't be done. So, I mean, yeah, but I mean, that we talked about, I think the other week, about our different game playing tendencies, because once you've started something, you have to finish it, or you prefer finishing it. Whereas I would almost definitely throw that game out the window when my new console arrived. That thing would be gone. Like, I'm,
well, this is it.
Yeah, I'm about to give up on KOTOR because 12 minutes is out in like 4 days.
So, yeah. I think it does exemplify our differences. You know, we both got this new machine, and I remember you dabbling on everything on your Xbox, playing
SSX3 is really good, mate. I'm just saying,
yeah, jumping into new stuff. Whereas I've got a bunch of things downloaded, but I'm gonna finish, I'm gonna polish off the PlayStation games so I can focus my attention fully on the games that I've got downloaded, because I've got a nice little list of things I'm gonna work my way through and hopefully enjoy every single one of them, including a couple of games called Ori and the Blind Forest and Ori and the Will of the Wisps. They should be, unless I've again messed up the settings, be downloaded now, hopefully.
The discipline that you have when it comes to video games, that you look like a preacher, like a priest who's got a very specific way of being, whereas I just feel like I'm this sort of like anarchic monster that sort of just like runs around in the church breaking all the pews. But I've got to get to things as and when I can. We didn't even say what our names were. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
We are. I'm Josh Brown, joined by Scott Tilford. It doesn't work when you do it at the end. I don't know how to react to it.
But we do it now. And with that in mind, we'll just catch you next week. We'll see what we can think of to talk about. But for now, it's been Classic Us, and we'll catch you next week. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.